cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another war, another towel went up where the homeless had their home.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, "Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs." Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
It's time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, can the crass commercialization of the sports world go too far? Yes, scream thousands of outraged baseball fans in unison. What riled them up was Columbia Pictures and Major League Baseball, two corporate entities that recently conspired in an effort to bring advertising directly onto the field of play. Ads have been creeping closer and closer to baseball's foul lines for some time. For example, stadiums bear corporate names and are plastered with logos. Scoreboards blare still more corporate names and constantly flash ads at the fans. And the wall behind the home plate has been transformed into a virtual billboard to hawk assorted corporate goods to TV viewers. On the field itself, however, the game is supposed to be the focus. And this is the line that Columbia and the baseball owners tried to cross for nothing more noble than cash. It seems that Columbia is launching a new Spider-Man movie this summer. So it offered team owners $3.6 million to promote the movie in every major league stadium. Included in the deal was an agreement to put Spider-Man logos atop each of the bases. Rules are important to the game of baseball, and a logo on a base is a flagrant violation. Baseball Rule 1.06 plainly states that the bases shall be marked by white canvas bags, period. But grabbing for a few extra bucks, the owner said, to hell with the rules. But whoa, Nelly, the fans said, to hell with the owners. Boos of derision cascaded onto both corporate entities. Some teams even balked, members of Congress spoke out, and the public heat forced Spider-Man off the bases. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a small victory in the face of corporate commercialism's assault on our entire culture, but you've got to take a stand somewhere. To keep pushing for more ad-free zones, call Commercial Alert, 503-235-8012.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org, and we have some on our website, tomhartman.com, put together by Mike Toth. Also, you can find our chat room, which is already filling up with some of the most erudite, thoughtful folks on the Internet. You can click off tomhartman.com to get to that. We're going to continue. Today is Friday, by the way. Happy Friday, Shabbat Shalom, TGIF, whatever's appropriate for you. Our first hour on Friday is usually brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders. We just got a call from Bernie. He's running a little bit late, stuff happening in Congress. So sometime in the next few minutes, in all probability, he's going to call in, and we'll move on to that, as it were. But in the meantime, we've got a few alerts for you here. Just continuing, I've been sharing with you parts of the agenda of the Republican National Convention. It's starting to come out. You know, these pieces are getting leaked to the press. And, you know, we're finding out what's, you know, really, really going to be happening here. We're up to September 1st, which I guess is the second or third day. 6 p.m. opening prayer by the Reverend Jerry Falwell, who will demonstrate the spirit of compassionate conservatism, trademark, and the eternal mercy of God by wishing a horrible, fiery death and an eternity in the pit of hell for all non-white, non-male, non-Christian, non-heterosexual, non-Republicans. Followed by Tom Ridge, raising the national alert level to pulsating red,
Isn't it interesting, by the way, that the remember when Ashcroft was in Russia about 5-6 months ago and he announced that, hey, we got this terrorist, and then everybody's going, wait a minute, Ashcroft, you know, you're off base here, and he had to take it back, and the president, he did it again, apparently. You know, Tom Ridge didn't even know that it's almost like Ashcroft's political instincts. You know, he was a governor, he ran for Congress, he ran against a dead guy and lost and ended up attorney general, but in any case, his political instincts, you know, when in trouble, scare people. Anyhow, Tom Ridge raises the national alert to pulsating red, back to the Republican National Committee, followed by the American Association of Insanely Rich Persons, the AAIRP. They will present Laura Bush with a platinum chainsaw in thanks for the Bush administration's tax cuts. This program sponsored, of course, by Gulfstream. So lots and lots going on, I believe, let me just check here, click on the right button if I can find it, Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. Is that right? Hey, Bernie, how are you?
I'm great. Sorry to be late here. I'm up in Lindenville, Vermont, and I just got finished talking to some senior citizens.
That's quite all right. We were just going over some of the exciting events that will be coming out of the Republican National Committee, you know, the award of the platinum chainsaw from the American Association of Insanely Rich Persons to Laura Bush for the tax cuts, sponsored by Gulfstream, of course, and things of that sort. Anyhow, we were able to fill a little time. I'm glad you made it. Interesting stuff here. I'm sure you have a list of things you want to talk about. If you don't mind, I'd like to just toss one thing out.
Sure.
This was on the front page of yesterday's paper, and I think it's and just a few paragraphs I'd like to read because I want to make this real for our listeners. This, of course, is a Vermont story. I've mentioned, I think we've had, you know, one or two murders here in this state in the last year or two, and we've lost 10 people now in Iraq. Here, Army Specialist Alan Bean Jr. was a country boy who preferred a big rusty truck and a six-pack of beer over a new sedan and bottle of wine. Bean was a son who liked to play practical jokes on his mother, brother, and sister and thought he could beat his father at wrestling. He was a father who never got to meet his son, who was born the day he landed in Kuwait to fight with his fellow Vermont National Guard members in Iraq. He was killed Tuesday morning when mortar shells exploded near him. It goes on through this, along with six other Vermonters. He left behind a legacy and gave me a special gift, his girlfriend said, where she lived during her pregnancy. I get to look at that gift every day and remember what a good man he is. I just wish he could have met his son. I loved him with all my heart, and I still do. I just wish there was some way to tell him that. These are human beings.
Well, you're right. And in this small state of Vermont, we have lost, as you've indicated, eight in the active duty, seven who were killed, one who died of a heart attack over there, and now two people in the Vermont National Guard, and then just yesterday, a couple of days ago, six were wounded, three seriously. That's just in one small state. And nationally now, what we're looking at is 800 men and women have been killed, and 4,500 have been wounded, and a number of them wounded very, very seriously in terms of amputations, loss of vision, other very serious problems. So this war has cost this country a great deal.
Yeah, and I read the other day, and I believe it was in the New York Times, that we have now officially spent more in inflation-adjusted dollars on the war in Iraq than we did in all of World War I.
Yeah.
Of course, back in World War I, we didn't have Halliburton to pay. We were basically just paying GIs and shipping them over there at our own expense.
This has been a very expensive war, and there is no end in sight. We're over $150 billion, and the numbers are growing. I think that where we are right now is a time to take a very hard look at what's going on, and bottom line is to figure a way to get out in a way that provides as much security as possible for the Iraqi people and for their future. And I think there are a couple of issues that have to be looked at. Number one, you may have also seen, Tom, a number of studies that have come out and polls that have come out recently which indicate that the vast majority of the Iraqi people now, for a variety of reasons, now regard the United States as an occupying force rather than as a liberating force.
Yes.
We have also, you know, seen polls now where the Iraqis want us to leave. In a study, another study that was very troubling, although not surprising, I think, to the listeners, It was done by a British research group, which concluded that, in fact, if we are concerned, as I think we all should be, about the war against international terrorism, probably what we are doing in Iraq is now counterproductive, and that we're seeing a swelling of the ranks of al-Qaeda.
Yeah, al-Qaeda, in fact, several studies now. Al-Qaeda is exploding around the country, and they're all pointing to Iraq. They're saying, see, those guys are after Islam. They're after Muslims, the defenseless country. They had a lot of oil. This is a war, quoting Boykin, you know, and Bush's pseudo-rhetoric. It's a war of civilizations, they're saying.
Right. And obviously those terrible, terrible photographs in the jail have only made a horrendous situation even worse. So the question is, and we have to stay focused, and the real issue is, in my view, international terrorism is serious business. How do we most effectively fight it? And I think if you think back and you say, we're spending $150 billion up to now in Iraq, think of what we can do, both in terms of winning hearts and minds, if you like, not to mention intelligence work, military efforts in the real fight against al-Qaeda and international terrorism, as opposed to what we're doing in Iraq right now.
Right, because terrorism ultimately is not a nation, it's not an army,
right.
It's an idea. It's animated
exactly
by
right.
a belief.
That's exactly right. There's never going to be a great military battle where the troops on both sides are lined up. That's not what this fight against terrorism is about. It's precisely as you indicated. It's a battle of ideas. And if the United States can make it clear to the poor people in the world, especially the Muslim world, that we are on their side, that we're helping them with health care and with education and with food, we're on their side and improving their standard of living, you know what? We take away a lot of the energy that Osama bin Laden is able to feed off of.
Yeah. And not just on their side, but also offering a good example, you know, to
right.
the world. I mean, the example that we have now is we've built a concentration camp in Guantanamo Bay. We've said, you know, Geneva Conventions, you know, forget them. I'm starting to rant and I'm starting to get negative, and I'd like to.
I think you should be negative, but I think we got to stay focused on what the issues are. And the issues are, number one, given the horrendous position that we're in right now, we're not starting from zero here. Given where we are now, number one, we have to focus on real, underlined sovereignty for the Iraqi people. And I have real doubts that that's what Bush is thinking about for June 30th. In other words, who is in fact going to be making the military decisions? Who is going to be in control of their oil? Who is going to be in control of their economy? Is it really going to be the Iraqi people? And you know what? They're not stupid. They know that. So I think we got to move toward real sovereignty for the Iraqi people. Number two, we have to, and this is where it's just so difficult given Bush's past history and his arrogance with regard to the rest of the world, but we need the help of the United Nations. We need the help of the rest of the world in a transition period to help Iraq in their movement toward independence. It should not only be American troops there, in addition to the British, but troops from around the world. And more importantly, it should be the entire international community helping to rebuild Iraq, and not just the taxpayers of the United States. And thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, we've got to be talking about an exit strategy as to when the troops are coming home.
Amen. We're speaking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's the first hour of our Friday program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders in 1991 became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He's since been elected, reelected five times, and is the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. America's Congressman Bernie Sanders here. Bernie, what's on your list here for today?
Well, interestingly enough, in the last couple of weeks, we weren't on the show last week, there's more and more coming out about this horrendous prescription drug Medicare bill that the Bush administration pushed and succeeded in getting passed at 5 o'clock in the morning after twisting arms for 3 hours and keeping open the rolls longer than any time in the history of the United States House of Representatives. The latest scandal regarding that bill is the General Accounting Office has informed the Congress that the Bush people put a taxpayer-funded video out in communities all over, television stations all over this country, pretending to be a news piece.
Yeah.
They had a phony reporter saying, this is somebody here talking about prescription drugs, and of course it was paid for and directed by the Bush administration at taxpayer expense, and the GAO said that is illegal. In addition, add all these things up, they become really quite damning. In addition, we just learned the other day that our friend Rush Limbaugh is being broadcast to the troops on American, as I understand it, American radio, government radio.
Armed Forces Radio, yeah.
We want to get you on there as well. We think the...
there you go.
You know,
I'm all in favor of it.
Could give it the other side of the story. But the idea that taxpayers in this country are paying to transmit Rush Limbaugh to the troops in Iraq... it's just another outrage on top of so many others.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. I wonder to what extent, for example, this thing of the administration putting out this phony propaganda about Medicaid, calling it news, or Medicare rather, calling it news, placing it in radio stations, buying the time with our tax dollars. The GAO now saying it's a crime. You know, is anybody going to be prosecuted for this? I really wonder. We got to take a break here. It's our telephone number. If you'd like to be on with Congressman Sanders, I know he loves to hear from you. Our number 1-866, one of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. It's Tom Hartman with Congressman Bernie Sanders, Friday afternoon, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Wall said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be?
Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives in America's history, Congressman Bernie Sanders, with us. And Bernie, we've got a couple of callers here. We should probably go to them before we. I would like to hear your thoughts on, you know, is somebody going to get prosecuted, and your thoughts on 73 different Medicare discounts. But we'll have time for that as time goes on. We've got only 5 minutes in this segment, so let's go right to Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Glenn, you're on the air. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. I just really look forward to Fridays with Bernie. I can't tell you how much.
Me too.
The other night, it just warmed the cockles of my heart listening to Gore's newfound inner Democrat coming out. And, you know, things are happening, like Franken's beating Rush like a stepchild in the markets where they're together. It sort of gives liberals permission to come out of hiding, I think. And what do you think about this undercurrent going on?
Glenn, I think this is what I think. I think that if anybody does not believe that the views that we hold, which call for social justice, world peace, environmental sanity, are not the views that are held by the vast majority of the people, then you don't know what's going on in politics. I think what has happened is because of the power of money in politics, because of the power of money in media, those of us who believe in justice, those of us who say, hey, all people in this country are entitled to health care. No, we don't give tax breaks to billionaires when we have children who are sleeping out on the street. Those of us who hold those views are in the vast majority. The problem is that for 100 different reasons that Tom Hartman does a great job talking about, a lot of people in this country have given up on the political process. So you have elections in which half the people vote, they're dominated by money, poor people don't vote, working people don't vote, and these guys end up winning, and then you turn on television and you're seeing large corporations telling you what the news is. So the main message that I have, you know, to you, Glenn, is not for a second doubt that our views are the views that are held by the vast majority of the people. Go out to a street corner in your town, introduce 10 pieces of legislation tomorrow. At this point, I don't see that as a significant concern.
Please raise the alarm when you think we should.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing that's never going to make it out of committee, is it, Bernie?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
Good,
no.
That's comforting.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, it's because it was only in 1803 that Justice John Marshall, the Federalist Chief Justice who had been appointed by Adams way out, you know, when he was a lame duck, that in the 1800s Madison case, or Marbury versus Madison, Marshall gave the court its own that power. It didn't have it. So, you know, there are people who are talking about legislative remedies to that. But, you know, it may be that actually Marshall was right, and it's a good thing. And, you know, that's a good debate anyhow. It's Friday afternoon, 29 minutes past the hour. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire or cages or fences like you find around George Bush's demonstrations. The real free speech zone. Stay tuned.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs. Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third-largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment are for the first hour of every Friday. It's really not the Tom Hartman Show. It's the Tom and Bernie Show, or the Bernie and Tom Show is probably more appropriately for this hour. We're so pleased to have Congressman Sanders on with us. Bernie, one of these days when you're in Montpelier, we've got a second microphone here. You got to drop by and we'll do this live and in person.
We will do that.
That'd be a hoot. Anyhow, we've got a couple of callers here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening on WTKG, I'm assuming there. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Yes, good day, Tom and Bernie. Congressman Sanders, pleasure to speak to you. I always look forward to seeing you on C-SPAN whenever you have something to say, which is almost always very interesting. But I was just wondering, New England, that part of the country there where Tom's show comes from and where you've been elected, it seems like that's the most progressive part of the country. I mean, even the Republicans seem to be more sensible. I mean, I look at people like Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe, and I think they're much better than a so-called Democrat like Zell Miller. And I just wonder, what is it about you folks up there? Why are you so intelligent and progressive, and how can we get the rest of the country to vote this way?
This is the clean air, Bernie.
Thank you very much. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And that goes back, I think, a long way. Going back, I could tell you that in Vermont, we have had a lot of grassroots democracy and town meeting heritage that goes back from the formative days of the state, where serious people talked seriously about real issues, and where we never developed a situation where a small clique of moneyed people were able to make most of the decisions. But I, in all due respect to somebody who obviously loves my own state and loves New England, I don't think that that New England has to stand out for being more progressive than the rest of the country. I think there's a lot of work that a lot of us have to do. I think that what has happened over the years, Rick, is that because the Democratic Party has not forcefully differentiated itself from the Republicans on economic issues, on workers' rights, on health care, a lot of people became confused and say, I don't see much of a difference between the two parties. And then the Republicans came up with all of their wedge issues, their homophobia, their anti-woman positions, their super patriotic positions, which suggest that if you're not for war, you're somehow anti-patriotic. And they have capitalized on a lot of confusion among people. I think the way that we make America more progressive is to focus primarily on economic issues. Ask the question why the middle class is shrinking. Over and over again, the most important question to my mind is, given the explosion of technology, the increase in worker productivity, why is the average American today working longer hours for lower wages than was the case 25 or 30 years ago? Stay on those issues. Ask those questions. Bring people together around the fight for health care for all, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, making college affordable to all people. How many of the listeners even know that throughout Europe right now, college is either free or very, very inexpensive? If they can do it, we can do it. We could pay these things through a progressive tax system, not continuing to have the most unfair distribution of wealth and income. Now, some of the stuff may sound radical to some listeners, but you know what? It really is not. If you take the time to explain these issues to the American people, and if you ask them whether they think it's a good idea that the richest 1% own more wealth than the bottom 90%, or that CEOs of large corporations make more, 500 times more than average workers. You know what? Vast majority of the people don't think that's appropriate. But we have too few political leaders who are prepared to raise those issues.
Well, as you know, it's hard to get an extension, say, for unemployment compensation from 26 weeks to 39. It's my understanding that in certain countries in Europe, you can get unemployment insurance up to a maximum, and this is a maximum and probably not the rule even in Europe, but for 5 years. Can you imagine, like I said, how difficult it is to get something through the House of Representatives just for a 13-week extension sometimes?
That's right, Rick. I mean, that's because, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I think we don't have the kind of political consciousness we should have in this country. We don't have people engaged in the political process. We are the only nation in the industrialized world that does not guarantee health care to all people. Europeans come here and they can't believe it. They literally cannot believe it.
I know.
Yeah, I can tell you, Rick, you know, when I lived in Germany, I was working with an organization, International Relief Organization, Kinder und Jugendhilfsversammlung, and we had a physician on our staff who at one point we were considering laying off. And the way the German laws work, it's not just like if you get laid off or if you get fired, you get unemployment for a certain number of years. It's for every year that you've worked, you get certain credit. And this guy had worked for this organization for something like 16, 18 years. And so he would have been eligible for, now this is a bad recollection, this is 15 years ago, something like about 5 years worth of basically a pension. You know, it wasn't viewed so much as unemployment as basically a pension sort of
thing. The other thing is that if you listen to conservatives, they'll say, well, we can't do things like that because we'll have a big budget deficit. Well, look at what our budget deficit is compared to European countries.
Yeah. That's right. And then you look at the tens of billions of dollars a year we give away in corporate welfare to companies like General Electric and General Motors, who then say, thanks very much for the welfare, we're off to China.
Well, so we're having a situation here in Michigan
Rick, because a lot of Americans are not aware that throughout Europe, there are benefits when you have a baby the kind of family leave that you get and the help you get, much more significant than in the United States.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and Rick, what's being done in Michigan? Just very quickly, we got a couple calls.
Well,
I want to move on. What's happening there?
They're trying to pass a cigarette tax to increase the cigarette tax with the Democratic Governor Granholm, and the Republicans will work with her on that if she allows tax breaks for businesses.
Oh, geez.
So there you have it.
Yeah. It's nuts. Rick, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. We got to move along. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on with Congressman Bernie Sanders, 20 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Richard in Nashville, Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Richard.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say I'm so fed up with these conservative talk shows where these talk show hosts, they get on there and they try to associate being liberal as, you know, being a coward. And this guy, Steve Gill in Nashville, he's just incredible. He never been to the military, and really that doesn't matter, but the way he talks, it's like, you know, I told him one day he needs to get the John Wayne Award for being the toughest radio host.
Yeah.
It's and just incredible.
John Wayne didn't serve either, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Richard makes an interesting point that some of these guys who talk the loudest about how wonderful war is and how we got to persevere and all that stuff, they never served in the military. And you talk to a lot of the military guys who do know what war is about, who take responsibility for the young people that serve under them, and they're not so gung-ho about war.
Yeah. It's, Rush Limbaugh, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Bill O'Reilly, Tom DeLay, Denny Hastert. I mean, they all had, as Cheney said, other priorities during Vietnam. And oh, well, anyway, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Derry in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Derry, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great.
Great to talk to you. And Bernie, too, by the way.
Hi, Derry.
I was just calling to see if anyone in Congress or any politicians are talking about the situation in Sudan. You know, we're sending billions of dollars to sort of hurt people in another country. If they could put a million or two aside to help some of these poor Sudanese people. And I was just wondering if there's any talk about sending aid or helping out in any way.
Well, I would say that in general, the United States does not do a particularly good job in foreign aid, nor are we particularly generous. And I think there is a growing understanding, not just from the United States, but from the industrialized world, that the gap between the first world countries, the industrialized countries, and the poorest countries is growing wider. And that we have a moral obligation through the United Nations to work together to and small amounts of money can go so far in preventing children from dying from preventable diseases, providing people with clean water, providing health care. So the answer to your question is no, I don't think we're doing a good job in Congress. In fact, I don't think we're doing a good job internationally in supporting the poorest people in this world.
And that's how you win the hearts and minds of people. I mean, you know, it's not a matter of bribery. It's a matter of being a good citizen, a good
that's
member
right.
of
and
the community.
And it touches on so many other issues. There are the pharmaceutical industry does not pay a whole lot of attention to the illnesses in developing countries, in warm climate countries, because those people don't have enough money to pay for the drugs. But I think there's got to be a radical change of attitude toward those folks around the world, the billion people living on a dollar a day.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Derry. I appreciate it. Well said. Our lines are open, 1-866-889-8894. Bernie, there are 73 cards. Now, this, first of all, in my mind, this is just an election year scam because this thing's going to go away next year, right? And these discount cards, and they're going to be replaced by this donut hole thing where you pay the first couple thousand and then all, you know, the government pays and then all of a sudden, gotcha. 73? I mean, how did this happen?
Well, this happened because this particular piece of legislation, this is the Medicare prescription drug bill, was written by the pharmaceutical industry for the pharmaceutical industry, and they got billions and billions of dollars in welfare, if you like, in this bill. The key, I can go on for many hours as to why this bill is very bad, but probably most importantly is the pharmaceutical industry managed to insert in the bill, in the conference committee, language that prohibits Medicare from negotiating with the drug companies to lower the cost of prescription drugs. So you have groups like Consumers Union who estimates that given the fact that the cost of prescription drugs are going up somewhere at between 15 and 20% every year, that 1 year after the implementation of the program in 2006, seniors will be paying more out of their pockets for prescription drugs with the program than they are paying today.
Yeah.
Because the cost will continue to go up and up, and the benefits offered in this program are rather minimal.
Well, there was a piece in the paper a couple of days ago that over the last 2 years, 2.5 years, prescription drug prices for the most commonly prescribed brand name drugs, which were the, will be the ones covered by these discount cards, have gone up 36% in 2 years. And so they crank them up 36% on average. Then they give you a card that's good for a 12 to 17% discount, which you pay them for. And then they say, aren't we being nice to you? Isn't this wonderful? Yeah, are America's seniors falling for this? I mean, what are you hearing out there?
I think it's generally perceived that this program is not working for Bush. Number one, it is enormously complicated. You have 73 different cards. Does the card that I have cover the drugs that I need? How does this card differ from that card? What these people don't have the courage to do, obviously, the Bush administration is beholden to the pharmaceutical industry. They're not going to stand up to them. The $64 question there is, why do we pay by far the highest prices in the world for medicine? If you did one simple thing, and there was legislation that I helped write that passed the House, we think we have the votes to pass the Senate, and that simply says that pharmacists and distributors and individuals should be able to buy safe FDA-approved medicine any place in the world where they could buy it for a lower price. That would do infinitely more for seniors than Bush's bill, which is going to cost $500 billion taxpayer dollars, and we could do that for nothing.
Yeah, this is not rocket science. I mean, this is very, very, very straightforward stuff. What else is in the news that you think is stuff that we should be sharing?
I tell you, as I go around the state, and I'd like to hear some of the listeners comment on this, I think this healthcare crisis is getting worse and worse. If you go and you talk to, I'm just in a school this morning, they're paying 15% more than they did last year, small businesses, 15, 20, 25% more people uninsured, more people underinsured, workers being asked to pick up more and more of the health care burden. And we have got to, as a nation, again, ask the question, why are we the only industrialized nation in the world that does not have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people, while at the same time we're spending twice as much per person on health care as any other nation?
And the answer is very simple, isn't it, that our political process is captive to corporate interests?
You got it. That's the one-sentence answer. The insurance companies, the function of insurance companies is not to provide health care. The function of insurance companies is to make money. We have an enormously wasteful bureaucratic system designed to make money for the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry, not to provide high-quality, cost-effective health care to all Americans. That discussion, we are so far behind the eight ball here, has almost not even begun in Congress because people say, oh, my God, we can't stand up to the insurance companies. We can't stand up to the drug companies. We can't stand up to the medical equipment suppliers. Healthcare is supposed to be a process by which people make all kinds of money, not by which we provide quality healthcare to all people. We are spending enough money in this country today that we could have excellent quality care for all of our people. And the shame of it is, boy, is it a shame, is it a horror. There are people dying every single day because they delayed going to the doctor. They can't afford to go to the hospital. They can't afford their prescription drugs. People are dying by the thousands.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got some callers here with some feedback on this. Tom in Western New York is on the line. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Bernie, isn't there a national policy about job insecurity through trade agreements and things like HB1 visas?
Sure. I mean, our trade, again, the question as to why the middle class is shrinking. The question, the very important question is, you know, unemployment numbers are very important. But what's equally important is the quality of the new jobs being created. Tom, you may have seen that study that came out of the Economic Policy Institute.
Yeah, 27% lower.
That's right. Yeah. I want folks to listen up on this issue. The new jobs that are being created pay 21% less than the jobs that we are losing. We are losing good-paying manufacturing jobs to China, Mexico. We're losing good-paying information technology jobs India, elsewhere. New jobs are service industry jobs, Walmart jobs, low-wage jobs. Trade and the so-called unfettered free trade has been a disaster for the middle class of this country. We're working hard to try to change.
And this is something that can be done at the level of government. It's not a free market issue.
Absolutely.
10 minutes before the hour, it's Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Europe is banking on market forces to help cut greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Next year, the European Union will launch the Greenhouse Gas Emission Trading Scheme. It will allow companies across Europe to buy and sell emissions allowances to meet overall reduction goals. Michael Marvin likes that approach. Marvin is president of the Business Council for Sustainable Energy, an industry group based in Washington, D.C. He says trading air pollution permits originated in the United States under the Clean Air Act as a way to cut sulfur dioxide, or SO2. Marvin says other countries have used that model to curb carbon dioxide emissions.
We're seeing progress on emissions trading. The progress, frankly, has been more rapid internationally than it has been domestically. As a result of the success of the Clean Air Act amendments and the SO2 trading program, we're seeing countries all around the world begin to adopt these trading programs, primarily in the form of CO2 trading.
Congress narrowly rejected a carbon emissions trading scheme in the McCain-Lieberman Climate Stewardship Bill last October, but Marvin says the market-based approach is gaining support.
the idea that we can monetize the environmental activities of companies who go out and proactively work to reduce their impact on the environment, that holds a certain amount of comfort and sway for policymakers. It simply says, look, here is the benchmark. If you are able to overachieve and overreduce, you will receive some financial benefits from that.
Congress might reconsider the McCain-Lieberman bill later this year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a beautiful day.
Welcome back. We can make it a beautiful day to get politically active. Get out there in November. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Tom Hartman and Congressman Bernie Sanders, our first Friday afternoon segment. And Emily in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Emily, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. It's such a pleasure to hear a voice of reason out there. And Bernie, thank you very much for your commentary. I just wanted to toss out something. You mentioned that this really hasn't been brought to the forefront as far as challenging the insurance industry as a money-making industry. And that is, I think, because there are so many jobs tied to it. I think that there's a great deal of fear out there that once we revamp the industry, you know, people like me who have insurance but still can't afford to use it are going to wind up costing people a lot of jobs. And I'm going to hang up and listen to the response on that.
Emily makes very good point. If you go to any hospital in America, often down in the basement, you're going to see a whole lot of people whose job it is to do billing. They don't provide health care, they do billing. These people are not our enemies. They need work. And I think when we develop a national health care system, we have to make sure that we incorporate those people, that we train those people, that we provide opportunities for those people to get jobs in the healthcare system, which really provide healthcare to people rather than just doing paperwork. But I think there are many people who are involved in healthcare now, who are involved in billing, involved in the insurance companies, who would be concerned. But that's an issue we can address, because the major point to be made about the difference between a national healthcare system and our current system is national health care is much more cost-effective. More of the money goes really to health care rather than bureaucracy and paperwork. We can save large sums of money, and we can create a situation by which we re-employ those people who are now pushing paper into more meaningful and productive work.
Plus, wouldn't you think that any Congress, any government, any president who was willing to push for and sign national health care into law would also be sufficiently progressive to be pushing trade policies that would bring back some of our manufacturing jobs, that would maybe roll back some of the provisions of Taft-Hartley and make, you know, more unionization in the United States, bring back the middle class so that those people who are working for insurance companies now can actually find good jobs in other industries as well?
That's exactly right. I mean, it's kind of like the argument about the military. Well, we should, you know, grow military spending because it creates jobs. No, you have military spending to protect the nation, not
right.
to grow jobs. We have, our job must be to create an economy which produces meaningful and important services and products which help people and provide people decent wages.
Amen. Amen. Well done. Bernie, Congressman Bernie Sanders, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Great. Bye-bye. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the real people's radio, where despair is not an option. Get active in November. Get active now, for that matter.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The
founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, "Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs." Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's time for another edition of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. The Richie Rich said is facing a terrible dilemma. The Summer Olympics are being held in Greece this year, and naturally, corporate CEOs want to be there and be part of the globe-hopping celebrity scene that swirls around such sporting galas. But gosh darn it, officials are warning that terrorists might make the Olympics a target. Of course, the government is providing a massive security force, including 40,000 police, 7,000 military troops, NATO jets, spy planes, and submarines. But the super wealthy swells of corporatedom are not about to accept the same security level that commoners get. So how can they feel extra special safe? Where there's money, there's always a way. And corporations are resolving their CEO's Olympic security dilemma by buying luxurious protection packages for them. Top honchos of such outfits as American Express, Citigroup, and McDonald's will stay not in swank hotels, but in specially outfitted yachts to be anchored in the harbor near Athens. Thus, if there's a terrorist attack on the Olympic site, the yachts can flee with their elite passengers. Citigroup, for example, has leased a luxury ship that includes everything from armed guards to a yoga studio for its Olympic-bound executives. At $150,000, it's a pricey deal. That's $150,000 a day, and that doesn't even include fuel for the yacht or food and drink. Another corporate package provides a yacht and onboard security, plus helicopters, bodyguards, armor-plated limousines, and a motorcycle escort to get the special ones to and from the Olympic contests. Guess who gets to subsidize this high-life security cocoon for CEOs? You and me. The corporations will deduct the yacht packages from their income taxes, claiming them to be a necessary cost of doing business. This is Jim Hightower saying, these guys get the gold medal for Olympic-level excess.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Breaking news, my friends, from BorowitzReport.com. Headline, Gore nabbed outside White House with megaphone, calls on 2,000 government functionaries to resign. The White House was the scene of a tense standoff last night as former Vice President Al Gore climbed up a tree on Pennsylvania Avenue and started demanding that over 2,000 government functionaries immediately resign. Mr. Gore shrieked, Office of Management and Budget Director Joshua B. Bolton should resign. United States Trade Representative Robert B. Zoellick should resign. Secretary of Agriculture Ann M. Veneman should resign. After receiving many complaints from neighbors, the police were dispatched to remove Mr. Gore from the tree, but to no avail. Police spokesman Charles Brill said, We sent a couple of patrol cars down there and basically told him to moveon.org. That's when he threatened to jump. After Mr. Gore vowed to leap from the tree if Stephen R. Blust, the chairman of the Federal Maritime Commission, did not resign, the police brought in an outside negotiator to defuse the mounting crisis, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean. In an attempt to remind the former president of all the vice president, actually, you could say Al Gore is our former president. He's our current president. Anyway, to remind the former vice president of all the people who cared about him, Governor Dean used a megaphone to scream a list of the states Mr. Gore carried in 2000. California, Mr. Dean shouted. New York, Massachusetts, Iowa, New Mexico, Oregon. Stalemate finally ended around 2 a.m. when the two men's megaphones both ran out of batteries, and Mr. Gore sheepishly climbed down from the tree. In a brief statement to reporters, Mr. Gore said, What the world needs now is a solar-powered megaphone, and that's what I will invent next. Thanks to Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. In all seriousness, I mean, you know, it's, I think one of the wonderful things about, about liberals, about, you know, about rational people is that, you know, we can make a joke of, about our own, and we can also say, hey, this isn't a joke. Al Gore's speech yesterday was absolutely brilliant. And you can, I believe, I may be wrong, but I believe that the entire speech is on the MoveOn.org website. You can just go to that, on, you know, MoveOn.org on the web and listen to it and see it. It was a brilliant, brilliant speech. And it raised some critical issues for us. As Bob Herbert points out in today's New York Times, he said the Al Gore pointed out that the war in Iraq is the worst strategic fiasco in the history of the United States. I would absolutely agree. As a strategic fiasco, you could say, you know, Vietnam was a terrible thing. 56,000 people died there. Yes, that was a terrible thing, and I mourn them. I'm, you know, friends of mine died in Vietnam. Terrible thing, but strategically, all that happened to us in terms of changing the world by losing in Vietnam was really relatively minor. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, in the multi-generational, some terrible stuff came out of it. You know, our interference in Laos and Cambodia led to the rise of Pol Pot. He murdered a million of his own people. Started the year, you know, restarted with the year zero. I mean, a lot of terrible things came out of it. But what we have done in Iraq, which is not the central battlefield of the war on terrorism, it is a war of choice against a country that controls 10% of the world's oil. What we have done in Iraq is absolutely the worst strategic fiasco in the history of the United States. Absolutely. Because what it has done is it has galvanized not only, you know, a few countries like, you know, in Vietnam, you had Cambodia and Laos, and, of course, all the Soviet satellites, you know, going, ah, bad guys, I shouldn't do that. And ultimately, when we bailed out, you know, the French were saying, hey, it happened to us in 1954. We're not surprised it happened to you, too. You know, we could have told you. You should have learned, you know, stuff like that. But now, you've got a billion Muslims on the planet who are looking at us going, maybe we should be remembering the 12th century. You know, this General Boykin, my God is bigger than your God, and he's in charge of a lot of this stuff, and George Bush has not only demoted him or even criticized him, but kept him in place and in power. Gore says Iraq has not become the central front of the war on terror. In fact, instead, Gore correctly points out that Iraq, because of the absolute incompetence with which we invaded this country, which we shouldn't have invaded in the first place, but, I mean, if you're going to do it, at least do it right, as Colin Powell would have suggested. You know, we didn't lose anybody in Bosnia. We didn't lose any soldiers in Kosovo. Look at what has happened here. But even beyond that, I mean, they're at least stabilized. Not only has it not the central front on the war on terror, like the cons will try to sell you, but it has become, as Al Gore pointed out, the central recruiting office for terrorists. You know, in some ways, because they're going there, because we don't have the manpower to police the borders. I mean, Saddam at least had sealed his own borders. We haven't been able to do that. And secondly, it's encouraging people. It's, you know, it's bringing them out of the woodwork. It's firing them up. The president said Mr. Gore had planted the seeds of war and harvested a whirlwind. That arrogance, Bob Herr points out, gave rise to the Bush doctrine of preemptive war, the contempt for international agreements like the Geneva Conventions, the dismissal of concerns by some of the highest-ranking military professionals about a war in Iraq and the way it should be fought, and the willingness of top administration officials to blow smoke in the eyes of ordinary Americans who were traumatized by 9/11. I mean, this is just psychological mass exploitation. As Al Gore said, the same preference for ideology over reality has turned trillion-dollar surpluses into multi-trillion-dollar deficits, and that same approach has led to the locking up of American citizens without recourse to lawyers or access to courts or even a right of their families to know that they're being held in secret. These and other matters are transforming the United States into a country that is more warlike, more brutal, less free, less just, less admirable, and much less appealing than the nation that existed when Mr. Bush stepped into the presidency in January 2001. That last paragraph, by the way, from Bob Herbert, from his column in today's New York Times. Excellent column, a speech that's no joke. Now, let's go back in time a little bit. I just found this morning. In fact, I wrote an op-ed piece about it, sent it into commondreams.org. We'll see if they run it over the weekend. When Thomas Jefferson died in 1826, William Wirt, W-I-R-T, who was a friend of his and was a congressman, was asked to deliver his eulogy on October 19th before the United States House of Representatives, in the hall of the House of Representatives, before the combined House and Senate, William Wirt. And in that eulogy, he made a couple of points that I think are still relevant today. He pointed out that Jefferson believed in democracy, national humility, and abhorred, as in disliked, was disgusted by, the idea of empire. Jefferson well understood, Wirt said, the danger of past empires, in fact, he wrote extensively about it in his letters, as well as the dangerous possibility of a future president who may seize more power than the Constitution intended. Here's a quote from Wirt's eulogy of Jefferson, in which he paraphrases Jefferson himself. The successful warrior, and think when I'm reading this to you, think about George W. and his neocon buddies. The successful warrior who had desolated whole empires for his own aggrandizement, the successful usurper of his country's rights and liberties, may have his hours of swelling pride, in which he may look back with a barbarous joy upon the triumph of his talents and feast upon the adulation of the syncopants that surround him. In the next paragraph, however, Wirt cited Jefferson's certain knowledge that those who seek empire will not only see their nation's downfall, but their own internal spiritual destruction as well. Again, quoting Wirt, paraphrasing Jefferson, but night and silence come, and conscience takes her turn. The bloody field rises upon the startled imagination. The shades of the slaughtered innocent stalk in terrific procession before the couch. The agonizing cry of countless widows and orphans invades the ear. The bloody dagger of the assassin plays in airy terror before the vision. End of quote. Empire, Jefferson believed, always ended in disaster. As Wirt summarized Jefferson's sentiments, quote, violated liberty lifts her avenging lance, and a downtrodden nation rises before them in all the majesty of its wrath. Are the neocons right? Must we be a worldwide empire? Is that the way to peace? Or is that, as history shows over and over and over and over again, the way to the destruction of our own nation? 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day. 23 minutes past the hour. Let's talk to Pete in New Mexico. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program.
Well, howdy. You're doing a great job there.
Thank you.
You're very dramatic today. So
you got to have fun doing this, and you've got to be, you know, it's got to be real. I mean, I'm not just doing drama for drama's sake. I thought those were some of the most brilliant words that have been written since 1826.
Oh, Okay, here's some dumb words I just wrote this morning for a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
George Sr. didn't pull out early enough. Birth control. Think about it.
This is like in the category of Clinton lied and nobody died. You know, bumper stickers. Okay. Right. All right.
Okay, I just wanted to throw that at you, Tom.
Yeah. You got any others there, or was that just the one?
No, that's as brilliant as I could be for one.
Okay, give it to me one more time, Pete.
Okay, George Sr. didn't pull out early enough. Birth control. Think about it.
Yeah, okay. A good one. Thanks a lot, Pete. I appreciate the call. You too. Have a great day. Have a great Friday and a great weekend. 20 minutes past the hour. Well, 19 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program. Our number, if you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894. We've got a daily mislead for you coming up. An interesting little bit of information about Mr. Greenspan that you might not have known. I want to continue with our list of foreign-owned businesses just in Pennsylvania, because it's one of the few states that actually publishes a list, but boy, is it going to boggle your mind. Lots more to come. 20 past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense, finally, in broadcasting.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000. $1,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
There you go. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman. 25 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman radio program live coast to coast, border to border. Who knows? Maybe even planet to planet. We're beaming down out of two satellites from outer space. The ABC Star Guide Jones stream, radio stations all across the country, and the Sirius satellite. Maybe on the on the Sirius the Dog Star they're listening to us, or maybe on the planet Theta, where they're going to come back and collect all the Scientologists when they're all clear. Who knows? Who knows? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to be on the air today, if you have a thought, question, comment, secret information, whatever it may be. Arthur in Crescent City, California is on the line. Hey, Arthur, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mr. Hartman. How are you today?
I am great, and I am Tom. Mr. Hartman's my father.
Okay, Tom, thank you.
What's up?
I have lived in Thailand. It was from 1989 through 1991, and I happen to have been living in the same building with the Saudi Airlines personnel who did the major 9/11 hit here. And I came back to the United States in 1995 and reported 9/11 to the Veterans Administration, FBI, and I also have a lawyer.
Wait a second. You say hang on just a second. You said you came back in 95 and you reported to the FBI 9/11. Now 9/11 hadn't happened yet. So
that's correct.
So you reported to them what?
That there were to be four aircraft that were to fly into two buildings. One was the World Trade Center. Nadine, my friend, was going to hit the number 2 building. It was going to collapse like a house of cards. The chemical plant on the West Coast for Saddam, and the Pentagon, and not the White House at that time.
And how did you know this?
I'd lived with Nadine and the flight attendants for Saudi Airlines in Bangkok for a year and a half.
And Nadine was one of the hijackers?
Yes, he was one that did the planning on the attack. He tried to attack the Saudi oil refineries at the end of the Gulf War in 1991. He and Ibrahim, his friend, they were both Christian Palestinian flight attendants, and they got caught at the airport. I called the airport when I saw them leave. They had 18 that came up from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, with their military haircuts. They were caught at the airport. They were strip searched. Mr. Armand, who was the manager of Saudi Airlines, came out and fired them immediately. 3 days later, I told Mr. Armand what their targets were because they had told me that they were going to hit the Saudi oil refineries. At that time, they were fired. Then Nadine told me that he was going to be the number 2 man. And I said, oh, you're finally going to be a co-pilot. And he said, no, I'm going to go into the number 2 building. And I said, oh, you're going after the Americans. And he said, yeah. And then he said Osama was putting him on the payroll because he got fired, he and Nadine.
So you told the Saudis about this. How did they respond to you?
I'm sorry?
You warned the Saudis that this was before 9/11. You warned the Saudis that these guys were going to try and hit Saudi Arabia you told them who it was.
That was their first attempt.
How did they respond to you? Did they ignore you?
Mr. Armand was in shock. He said he had fired Nadine and Ibrahim and was cleaning all the rest of who.
So they took you seriously.
Was responsible for that, and awarded me the Saudi Medal of Valor for the save of the Saudi oil refineries.
You got the Saudi Medal of Valor for this?
Yes.
And so then in 95, you went to the United States FBI and said that you knew about what was coming up with 9/11. We've only got about 10 seconds before we got to take a break. What I'd like to do is hold you over the break here, Arthur, if you'd like. I have read fragments of this story here and there on the Internet, and I'm assuming you're the person who's the source of them, and I'd like you to finish telling that story, if you don't mind.
And I have also tape of VA personnel in the legal department whom I've reported this since 1995.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll wrap this up in just a minute. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about the Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs. Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third-largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
But I've heard
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We are speaking with Arthur from Crescent City, California. Arthur, the folks in our chat room are wondering if you're one of these folks who wears tinfoil hats because the aliens are talking to your head. Give me some evidence.
I'm a graduate from Golden West College and went to University of Hawaii and was teaching English and Business English at the Assumption Business Administration College in Bangkok. And I do have this very well documented through other people, and like you to hear they're part of this too.
Yeah. So you know, not to say that all the strange folks out there wouldn't say that, but as I said before, I actually have gotten some pieces, some fragments of this story on the internet or an email, and which is why I didn't immediately think, okay, this guy's a kook and cut you off.
Oh, thank you.
So let's just wrap this story up here. Because my understanding of what I had read previously on the web is that you are now facing some problems with the FBI as a consequence of the fact that back in 95, you had gone to them and said that when you were in Thailand, you knew one of the people who ended up being one of the suicide bombers in 9/11, that you knew what the plan was, that you had warned them of it, that they blew you off, and that you're in a position now to make them look like fools, and they're trying to neutralize you. Am I characterizing that well?
Well, that's the first time I've heard it that way, but that summarizes it.
Okay, so tell us what happened. In 95, you came back. First of all, you went to the Saudis and told them that nasty stuff was going to happen. It did. They gave you the Saudi Medal of Valor. You moved back to the United States. You're in California. And in 95... What is that, 7 years before 9/11, 6 years before 9/11?
Yes.
You go to the FBI and you say what?
Okay, I told them that there was to be a four-part aerial attack, and I also went to the VA. And I have a letter here from Robert Cochran, who's an attorney here, who sent a letter to Congressman Mike Thompson. And it says, on September 9th, 2003, I had an interesting conversation with a local resident named Arthur Murphy, who has had a substantial amount of world travel, and he particularly showed me his passport from Bangkok, 1989 to 1991. Mr. Murphy indicates during the initial Gulf War, he had contacts with numerous persons involved in world terrorism who revealed a great many specifics as to plans.
Yeah, Arthur, you don't have to read me the whole thing. Just give me the gist of it. It says that the
terrorist plans have since become fact. And then I also covered myself by calling Alan, who's a computer specialist at the VA Legal Department at the Federal Building in Portland. And I could just play you about 10 seconds of this tape, and he will... And on this tape, he says that he's had contacts with the FBI and with Homeland Security, given him the reports of 9/11, Bali, and the UN building that were to get hit.
Actually, before you play the tape, if you don't have him on tape giving you permission to tape it and play it on the air, it's not legal. I mean, you can get permission to tape things from people, but you also have to get permission to play it on the radio.
He did. He said that he wanted this to go to whoever that we could get this to, because these messages aren't going out and getting to the people, and he gave me that permission.
You got 10 seconds.
In 1995, when we first started the documentation.
You want to dump it right now?
Sure. You ready?
Yep.
It's a poor tape.
Yeah. About 97.
August of 97.
Yeah, I think so,
yeah. But, I mean, do you remember we did talk about the incident before it happened? I think he said later that he lived with those guys for over a year. And I said, yeah, a year and a half with them.
Okay, we're past 10 seconds here, Arthur, and I'm getting the gist of it, and it's a pretty lousy tape. I'm not going to continue to inflict it on my listeners, but Arthur, if you can turn the tape off, please. And Arthur?
Just take one more minute.
Okay. tell us what has happened now, Arthur, since that time. I'm not sure that anybody can even tell what the tape is saying, so I've potted this thing down. Tell us what's happened to you since then.
Since then, I had been arrested, and when I was arrested, I was here at the Sheriff's Department, and they asked me about Bali, how I knew about Bali.
You mean the Bali
before.
Bombing by Al-Qaeda last year? Or this
yes.
year? Yeah.
And that's what Alan says right here next on the tape. That,
right.
That I did report Bali. If you want to hear that, that'll just take a second.
I don't want to hear it. I'm willing to listen to you.
Okay.
You know.
And then there was his name was Agent Walters, who had contacted through Homeland Security. He was there at the arrest, and he asked me how I knew about Bali a year before. And I said, did you check out the 9/11 reports from that I had made in 1995 and 1997? He said, yes, I did. I said, were those accurate? He said, yes, they were. We did confirm them. Also, Officer Gill was there.
Yeah.
And then
Arthur, let me just cut to the chase here real quickly. Number one, why are you calling this show with this information right now?
Because I wanted to go public, because it's not gone public.
Okay. This is a beginning. Are you issuing a news release? Are you sending out information?
Yes.
Are you okay? You've get a piece written on Common Dreams or on BuzzFlash or Op-Ed News or something like that, and that sort of thing. I know. I'm sure. You know, any of those places, if you had the information, you got it laid out, they would love it. They would love to go for it with it.
Who are those people?
These are some of your quote liberal or progressive website news websites. You know, commondreams.org, buzzflash.com, opednews.com, makethemaccountable.com. Well, there's a bunch of them. If you go to tomhartmann.com and you go to the show homepage, there's links to all of these places. You can easily find them. So, number one, you wanted to go public with this. Why did you want to go public with it?
Because I got arrested and I'm sitting here with no attorney and I'm trying to defend myself against coming back to the United States and doing the right thing and reporting these acts that were going to happen, and then then I was attacked after 9/11.
So you're looking for some help on this?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a way that you would feel comfortable, keeping in mind that we are on national radio right now, people all around the world are listening to the Internet,
yeah.
Not to mention people all across the United States on radio stations, that you would like to give out that people can contact you, or is there a website?
No, I just have a home phone number, and I've been going through Tom Seaborn, and Tom is going. He says he's helping me out. Going.
Oh, KGOE.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It was Tom who sent me the facts about this. That's where
Tom's
I got.
Tom's got all the package. He's got these tapes. He's got everything.
Okay, so if somebody wants information about this, they should contact our affiliate radio station KGOE in Eureka, California. Is that what you're suggesting?
Oh, is that what it is? I'm sorry, I just had this number, and he said that I might call, and it was a couple of months ago that he said to call, so...
Yeah, well, we're on that station, but we're also on a whole bunch of other ones, so you've gotten your message out here, Arthur, and, I hope somebody can help you out, and good luck in getting the message out.
Okay, and it's just the messages aren't getting passed through to the president or to the 9/11 committees, and I'd like to see that happen, and it isn't just this administration, it's the administration before, so it's
sure.
The people in between that
have
got to stuck up here.
Seems like there's some scapegoating going on. Okay, Arthur in Crescent City, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Strange events. I mean, it's just strange. It's going to be fascinating to see how this thing plays out with Arthur and, you know, others of this sort. So anyhow, we have our daily mislead. Yes. George Bush is making a trip today to Tennessee, where he will hold a photo op at a children's hospital and then attend a $2,000 per person fundraiser at the home of a top health insurance executive. The two events provide a perfect display of how the president has misled America on health care policy. At the same time that he's tried to slash funding for children's hospitals, his budget lavishes billions of dollars on health insurance companies who fund his campaign. During today's first event, the president is expected to praise children's hospitals. However, his budget this year proposes to freeze funding for grants to these hospitals, preventing their federal grants from keeping pace with inflation. He also proposes a $94 million cut to the Community Access Program, effectively eliminating another program that provides grants to children's hospitals in need. And he's trying to slash $158 million, that's 68%, from training grants for specialties that include pediatrics. These efforts are consistent with George Bush's past policies. Last year, the president proposed cutting $86 million, 30%, from grants to children's hospitals. And in 2002, he proposed to cut $35 million, 14%, from grants for children's hospitals to train pediatricians. After his photo op at the children's hospital, which no doubt you will see on the news tonight, although you may not have heard
as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story here that we have been sharing with you. The president will attend a fundraiser after his, by the way, government paid for photo op at the Children's Hospital. The president will attend a fundraiser at the home of Clay Jackson, an executive at a health insurance company called BB&T. Unlike the Children's Hospitals, whose budgets have been cut, insurance executives like Jackson have a lot to thank the president for. For instance, the president crafted a Medicare bill that gives health insurance companies a new $130 billion subsidy, $130 billion welfare payment to the insurance companies, although we're cutting about just $94 million from community access. I mean, it's just... While forcing many seniors off traditional Medicare and into HMOs, the president has done almost nothing to address the skyrocketing costs of health care, sitting by last year as HMOs raised premiums by 13% and raked in an extra $6.7 billion from Americans. But they are going to treat him very well tonight, no doubt, at that fundraiser at that insurance industry executive's house. Our daily mislead for the day. Another bit of information here you may find interesting as we move along with the show. We ought to do this, the fancy way. There we go, Greenspan. He's a White House regular. Did you know this? Since George Bush, Alan Greenspan is supposed to be independent of the White House. The Federal Reserve Bank is not a government agency. It is one of maybe a handful, a half a dozen or so corporations that were sanctioned by federal law. See, the vast majority of corporations, 99.9999% of corporations, you want to start a corporation, you have to file with the local state secretary of state. There are a couple of federal corporations. Amtrak is one, for example. The Fed is a private corporation, just like Amtrak, that is authorized by the government, but it's actually owned by 12 Federal Reserve banks in different regions around the United States. For example, the one closest to me is in Boston, the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Those banks, in turn, are owned by local banks, like, for example, here in Vermont, the Chittenden Bank is a member of the FDIC. It's a member of the federal banking system. That is, it owns stock in the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, which owns stock in the Fed. So ultimately, the Fed is owned by the banking system. And in fact, I could buy stock in the Chittenden Bank, and I'd be a stockholder in it. So it's really a private thing, right? But it operates with a lot of government, as did Fannie Mae and as does Amtrak and whatnot. It operates with a lot of government, some government regulation and a lot of government help. And the head of the Fed is appointed to these, I believe they're 12-year terms, they might be 8-year terms. Greenspan, of course, being the current one, his runs out in another year and a half. And they're supposed to be separate from government and from politics. The idea, the Fed was created back either in 1913 or 1921. I don't remember which. I believe it was 1913. In order to stabilize our currency. I mean, this was a battle that had been going on. Alexander Hamilton was the first to propose a federal bank. We had two of them from the time Alexander Hamilton was Secretary of the Treasury in the Washington administration until the 1840s, 1846, when the Second National Bank of the United States collapsed, went bankrupt finally in Pennsylvania. And we never quite pulled it together. And then, the Gilded Age and all these problems, and the nation's banker basically was J.P. Morgan. There were all these private banks. And the government pulled it together in 1913, created the Fed. So they're supposed to be independent. And they're supposed to operate in a way that maintains currency stability. These are, all the highfalutin theories, right? And so you would think that the head of the Fed would not be a political animal. The head of the Fed would have to be somebody who is operating, at the very least, in the interest of the banking industry, which owns the Fed. And ideally, by virtue of its charter, Congress had to pass a charter to authorize the creation of a federal corporation. It requires an act of Congress for a federal corporation to be created. In order for that to happen, you would expect that the Greenspan would be independent. Well, it turns out, since Bush took office in early 2001, Greenspan has met with White House officials an average of 44 times a year. 44 times a year, Greenspan has met with White House officials. This has never happened before. He was an early supporter of the Bush tax cuts. He's in favor of making the tax cuts permanent. He's talking about eliminating Social Security and Medicare in order to pay for the tax cuts. Greenspan, of course, is a multimillionaire. His wife, Andrea Mitchell, one of the more influential journalists you will see on TV constantly. Did you know that? Interesting little factoid. And here we have, this is, in the words of the Washington Post, a huge and historic shift for a Fed chairman. What's going on here? What is going on here? American Banker magazine was actually the one that outed Greenspan on this thing. Since Bush took office in early 2001, Greenspan has met with White House officials an average of 44 times. This year, so far, 2004, it's only May, he's met with the White House 12 times. 12 times. This is like Prince Bandar in Saudi Arabia saying, "Don't worry, George, we'll get the oil prices where you need them to get reelected." Is Greenspan doing the same thing? 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Why do we buy things? An environmental group wants consumers to think about their motives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Our consumer culture is tough on the environment, using up natural resources and creating pollution and waste. But many people say they simply like to shop, or at least they think they do. Studies show that some people buy things compulsively, as if addicted to shopping. Michael Renner is a researcher with the World Watch Institute. He's written about consumer motives in World Watch's new State of the World report. Renner says the accumulation of material goods does not necessarily make people happier.
When you look at studies and observations over time, people nowadays with a far higher material standard of living than, say, 20 or 30 years ago or 50 years ago or even longer, when people are asked about, you know, are they happy in their lives, the answers as a whole do not indicate that the more that people have materially, that the happier they are.
If consumerism doesn't make us happy, then what drives it? People buy stuff for a variety of reasons, including competitive consumption, the need to keep up with others, or with an ideal image of success. But Renner says that often means going nowhere ever faster.
There is this old notion of sort of keeping up with the Joneses. I guess to the extent that everybody tends to have more in the way of material possessions, having more yourself just doesn't seem to be quite the same. So if you really want to be in this treadmill, you have to run harder. It doesn't mean that you really ever quite reach your goal, because it's a treadmill.
The World Watch Institute has a new online guide for environmentally conscious consumers. You can find it on its website at worldwatch.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I hope you never lose your sense of wonder. You get your fill to eat, but always keep that hunger. May you never take one single breath for granted. God forbid love ever leaves.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4 minutes before the hour. This recovery is upside down, according to the Center for American Progress. An interesting idea here. It's profits, corporate profits. This apparently has never happened before in a so-called economic recovery, where income growth is actually going down. The average pay of jobs, the new jobs that are being created, 21 to 27% less than the old jobs that we're losing. So the middle class is losing out, workers are losing out, pay is going down. At the same time, the corporate profits are going up. And of course, because most of our press these days doesn't report on labor issues anymore, they just report on business issues, it seems like there's a recovery going on. And if you're a billionaire, there sure is. But it's an upside-down recovery, an upside-down recovery. This recovery, as compared to previous ones, one of the distinguishing features of it is a growing gap between supply and demand. Demand for new products is actually slow, while supply growth is strong. This isn't supposed to happen, although this is, you know, remember supply-side economics? Well, we've got it. And you look around. That's what you get. Business profits have soared while wage and unemployment gains have lagged. This recovery marks the first time in history that the share of additional income that has gone to profits is larger than the share of additional income that has gone to employee compensation. Since 1776, the first time, not the first time in the last 5 years, not the first time since the end of World War II, not the first time in history. It was during the Reagan administration that voodoo economics, supply-side economics, was first proposed. He tried it, you know, his tax cuts in the first year. He had to raise taxes 6 years in a row after that in order to prevent a disaster. I mean, as he was going progressively Alzheimer-ish, at least the people around him were holding things together. George H.W. Bush had to raise taxes. Bill Clinton raised taxes, finally got things back together, and now we got George W. in here. He's going to try it all the way, and boy, has he done it. And it's wiping us out. It's wiping us out. It is crazy.
Tom Hartman here with you on the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, "Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs." Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
It's time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, can the crass commercialization of the sports world go too far? Yes, screamed thousands of outraged baseball fans in unison. What riled them up was Columbia Pictures and Major League Baseball, two corporate entities that recently conspired in an effort to bring advertising directly onto the field of play. Ads have been creeping closer and closer to baseball's foul lines for some time. For example, stadiums bear corporate names and are plastered with logos. Scoreboards blare still more corporate names and constantly flash ads at the fans. And the wall behind the home plate has been transformed into a virtual billboard to hawk assorted corporate goods to TV viewers. On the field itself, however, the game is supposed to be the focus. And this is the line that Columbia and the baseball owners tried to cross for nothing more noble than cash. It seems that Columbia is launching a new Spider-Man movie this summer. So it offered team owners $3.6 million to promote the movie in every major league stadium. Included in the deal was an agreement to put Spider-Man logos atop each of the bases. Rules are important to the game of baseball. And a logo on a base is a flagrant violation. Baseball Rule 1.06 plainly states that the bases shall be marked by white canvas bags, period. But grabbing for a few extra bucks, the owner said, to hell with the rules. But whoa, Nelly, the fans said, to hell with the owners. Boos of derision cascaded onto both corporate entities. Some teams even balked, members of Congress spoke out, and the public heat forced Spider-Man off the bases. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's a small victory in the face of corporate commercialism's assault on our entire culture, but you've got to take a stand somewhere. To keep pushing for more ad-free zones, call Commercial Alert, 503-235-8012.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. What would 475 different lobbyists for the 100 largest companies and trade associations in America be willing to spend $49 million, 82% of which goes to Republicans, for? What might they want? What might they want? And you know, of course, giving away $49 million, plus you got 475 of these lobbies, you got their payrolls. This is probably $100 million before all is said and done. I have an interesting one for you on this. We will get to that in a few minutes. But first, our conservative crankpot of the day alert.
Condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say everybody hates my guts.
Really kind of crankpot of the week.
I'm a bigot. I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
Yes.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
Yes. indeed our right-wing radio alert here. This one actually from Sean Hannity. He says, why would Al Gore associate with a group that is that left-wing and that radical? Speaking of MoveOn.org, what if he spoke before the Klan? Would we not hold him in judgment for that?
I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
The
cop, Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo. The right wing.
These guys have it all figured out, don't they?
Slob, the democratic trasher. Years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit. Because I'm a Nazi.
Our right-wing radio alert for the day. Yeah, 9 minutes after the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, and boy, do I have a story for you in just one moment. 866-889-8894. 866. That's, you know, they ran out of 800s. They went to 888, then 877, then 866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the air. Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Dave, Tom, I think your caller there, Arthur, if he's credible, and I'm inclined to think he is, this may be very significant. He would be one of many people, including Russia's President Putin, that had provided warning to the federal government in plenty of time for them to do something. He, however, if I understood him right, didn't make the connection that the White House or the government didn't want to know what he was trying to tell them. Did he? Did you get that impression from him?
I can't speak for him. I got the impression that in '95 he told them about this. They largely ignored it, and now they're coming back at him for, you know, how did you know kind of thing. Were you part of it? The general paranoia. But I'm just guessing on that. I mean, this guy's story. I can't vouch for it. I don't know anything about it.
But
he's local to your
him.
Community, by the way. I mean, you guys are listening. I think you're listening on KGOE, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and I know Tom Seba, and I'm going to try to talk to him. I've got to call into him on it because...
It would be, you know, it'll be interesting, you know, for you all there to figure this thing out, and you know, if I can help give it some national publicity, if it pans out, if there's any reality to it, I would be pleased to. I think there are other venues that will get faster response, print venues, you know, like some of the websites that I was mentioning to him. This, you know, even Matt Drudge, right-wing crank that he is, goes for interesting news. I wouldn't even rule that out, you know. So, you know,
That I've been a student of, I'm studying this book, New Pearl Harbor, and it's a shocker. A lot of us are finding it knocks us on the floor, but it seems very rational, logical, credibly put together. And it, if you can believe after that the White House was not complicit in this, you have a better ability to reframe reality than I do.
Well, I just finished reading the book, 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And,
oh, is that right?
And, yeah, and a friend of mine gave it to me a couple weeks ago and said, you got to read this. And I've had enough callers about it. You know, I thought, okay, I'm going to read this book. And, they lay out a lot of information. And for me,
You don't want to believe it.
You know,
Nobody wants to believe it.
It's not even that. I mean, you know, some of it is pretty solid. Some of it is pretty weak. In a lot of places, they themselves go out of their way to say, we're not drawing conclusions from this. We'll let you draw your own. I remember back in 1962 or 63, when I was a kid, I was like, you know, 12, 13 years old. I read a book by John Stormer called None Dare Call It Treason, which is probably still in print. And it was a book about how the communists had infiltrated the State Department, in particular, and the and Congress and everything else, and they were coming to get us, and Joe McCarthy was right, and blah de blah de blah. It was, I guess, an early version of Ann Coulter, except it was actually a rational book. I mean, I read that book several times, and I took it really seriously, and it wasn't until 67, 68, when I had, you know, a real significant political awakening as I came of draft age and began to pay attention to what was, you know, really going on, that I went back and I read through the book again and saw that, you know, you can take a lot of information and kind of throw it out there,
selectively in ways that, that can cause people to draw conclusions that may or may not be warranted. And I, you know, as I said, I've now read this book that you're talking about, you know, the new Pearl Harbor. I think it raises questions that need to be answered. I'm very disappointed that a lot of the questions that it raises have not been answered, have not been even raised in public by, for example, the 9/11 Commission. And there are some parts of it that I think are very weak, and that the authors themselves, if you've read it, as you know, go out of their way to say, you know, we can't draw conclusions from this. This might be a coincidence. Coincidences do happen.
You should be aware on this that David Griffith is an empiricist, and he pursues evidence without a prior conclusion.
Right. In fact, he says that over and over in the book. You know,
yeah,
we're not trying to tell you how to think about this. Here's the information.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
And if you know, if you were trying to prove a point, and then you look for evidence, you tend to find what evidence you're looking for. So that's why he doesn't want. He's a rational empiricist.
Yeah, which of course is what you know, John Stormer was doing with None Dare Call It Treason, and a lot of other books, you know, on both sides. I mean, you know, from Michael Moore and to Ann Coulter. I mean, you know, people to me. I mean, you know, I write books. I of course I'm going to look for arguments that support my position. That's just, you know, what people do. In any case, for me. Number one, the jury to some extent is still out with regard to the complicity of the Bush administration. I'm convinced that they knew that something was going to happen. I mean, look at the August 6th briefing, if nothing else.
If they're on the mark, boy, that is the news.
Yeah.
There is no other news.
Yeah, but you know, whether, you know, to what extent, I want to know, what do they know, when did they know it, you know, what, you know, there's a lot of good questions that need to be answered. I'm not ready, however, to say that anybody, any elected officials within the United States government played a role in planning or executing this thing. I am willing to enthusiastically, aggressively embrace the idea that they knew something was going to happen, and that they did very little to stop it, and in fact that they were very rapid to use it to their political gain.
You might be able to get as a guest an FAA person or a jet pilot and ask them, why were you not allowed to go up and intercept that plane on that day? Where did that order come from?
Yeah, those people are not going to, they're not talking to anybody. They're not talking. You know, journalists with bigger names and better reputations than me have tried, and it hasn't happened. Dave, thanks for the call. I got to move along here. Armin in Florida is on the line, 15 minutes past the hour. Hey, Armin, what's up?
I got a great idea for a poster.
Okay.
That puts this thing all into its proper context, in my opinion.
Right.
How about a nice big poster with a whole bunch of pictures in there, because each picture could tell 1,000 words. And the poster would say, endless wars for endless profits. And there would be two spellings, obviously, of profits. And there would be different pictures. There would be all the defense contractors' pictures in their big homes. You could have the prophets, you know, Osama bin Laden, his picture, and then the Carlyle Group insignia, and then ABC, CBS, NBC, and all this in this big poster.
Jerry,
you know,
Falwell, you know, saying, and Pat Robertson saying, you know, this was revenge because of homosexuals in America. That's a, you know, it's a.
And the $700 million club, excuse me, the $700 club, I mean, no. The 700 club.
It was
Pat Robertson.
A billion dollars, actually. Pat Robertson sold that Christian Broadcasting Network for $1 billion. Yeah.
You get my point, though.
I think it's great. I think you're a very creative guy, Armin, and that would be very. If it was done right, that would be great.
And there's one other thing. You could take it one step further for the people that really want to be sophisticated. Underneath each picture that one would decide to use in this poster, you could have a website explaining the abuses or the very questionable ethical, moral, or legal, you know. Context of these people and their wealth accumulation, you know, like different websites underneath each picture.
Yeah. Well, good one. And, you know, keep it up. Keep up, you know, coming up. In fact, there's a project for you. There's a project for you. Something, you know, fill up your time. I've actually, you know, I saw the other day, I don't remember where I saw it. I saw a photograph. It was a poster. It was large. It was like, you know, 2 by 4 feet. And it was made up of little tiny pictures of people who died on 9/11, but the different pictures had different brightness values and colors, and when you looked at it from stepping back from it, you saw the Twin Towers. And I thought that was, you know, somebody put a lot of work into that, and that was a beautiful effort that was totally non-political. I mean, just, you know, sort of a memorial. I thought it was nice. Here's an interesting factoid before I get into telling you about what Congress is up to and what these
lobbyists are up to, which is really, I think, the big story for the day. But just a little one. The Army announced this from the Center for American Progress. David Sirota, who does just a brilliant job putting together a progress report every day, AmericanProgress.org. This week, the Army announced the new recipient, drum roll, the new recipient of the $259 million contract to supply guns to the Iraqi Army. The name of the company, ANHAM, which no doubt is an acronym for something in Iraqi. The new company, however, turns out to actually be the old company. It's just a reconstituted version of NOUR, N-O-U-R. A company whose earlier contact with the Army had been suspended as it undergoes investigation for giving military secrets to Iran, as it's involved with, connected with, perhaps owned in some way by, convicted bank swindler, and darling of Doug Feith and Don Rumsfeld and Richard Pearl and Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, darling of them all, our friend, your friend and mine, Ahmed Chalabi. His company just got a $259 million contract, your tax dollars, to buy guns from Ahmed Chalabi to give to the new Iraqi army. I can't even say it. It's just too sarcastic. Ain't crony capitalism wonderful? That's the closest I'll get. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev. Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Carlo Baggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado la marcha de mis pies cansados, con ellos anduve sin dar desdichado.
Oh, I wish I remembered my Spanish. Two years of Spanish when I was in elementary school, and I don't... Anyway, welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you. This is just absolutely remarkable. This is Public Citizen, one of the extraordinary and noble things that Ralph Nader has done with his life is create a number of these organizations which have endured the destruction of his reputation. The meltdown of his logical processes. In creating organizations like Public Citizen, and I just, you know, just to give you 30 seconds of my Ralph Nader rant, I heard it, he was in Vermont yesterday. And I didn't go to the gig, but I heard the excerpts and the interview on Vermont Public Radio, you know, fairly long. You know, they gave him 5 minutes or so. And he goes through this whole thing about, you know, these guys, they don't want there to be third parties in America. We can have a third party anywhere in Europe. I mean, if this was Germany, I could get on the ballot. If this was France, there wouldn't be any problem. I just think it's wrong that these guys are trying to keep a two-party system. You know, Ralph Nader is either an idiot or a liar. I mean, I heard him go through this whole rant, and I know that all across America there are people, my son goes to the University of Georgia, and he went down and heard Ralph Nader speak, and he called me up and he said, that guy's really great. He says a lot of really important things. And I'm going, yeah, you know, I agree with his position on virtually every issue. I voted for him in 2000. But his main pitch now is, well, you know, why can't we have a third party? We get, rah, rah, rah. You know, third party, so you can do it in every other country in the world. I should be able to do it here. Well, every other country in the world hasn't imitated our Constitution. We were the first modern democracy. The last one was 2,300 years ago in Greece. And it fell under the heavy fist of Alexander the Great. I forget the year, what, 352 BC or something like that? Anyhow, it's been a couple of thousand years, and we were the first, and we didn't quite get it right. And James Madison knew this. He saw this thing coming. He wrote about it. You can read it in Federalist Number 10. Look it up on the Internet. Federalist Number 10. Of all the Federalist Papers, it's the one that's really important to read. 34 is pretty good, too. And 54 is pretty good. But Number 10, in which James Madison, this is when they're trying to sell the Constitution to the average person, you know, to get the states to ratify it. And he says, we can't have factions. Factions is the word that they used in 1787 to describe what today you would call political parties, he said, because if we have factions, people will, they will divide themselves into two groups, and whichever group gets 1% more than the other group, in other words, 51 versus 49%, will win everything, and the group that represents 49% of the people will not be heard, and that would not be fair, and so we can't have factions. He was begging, don't create political parties. Well, yeah, right, right. That you know, that it's like, you know, please don't throw me in that briar patch. Well, you know, he was enough of an idealist, I guess, that he actually thought it was possible. But the bottom line was that once the Constitution was passed, and as they discovered in the election of 1800, political parties formed, and because we have first-past-the-post winner-take-all elections, uniquely in our system of government, us, Greece, and Canada, you can only really have two major parties, and a third party is always going to hurt the one it's closest to. And Ralph Nader is lying about this.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The United Steelworkers of America sued Bridgestone Firestone this week, accusing the tire maker of violating its First Amendment rights. 6,000 union workers at Bridgestone Firestone factories in seven states have been working without a contract for 13 months now, and a major impasse in the negotiations involves the moving of tire production out of the country. 2 weeks ago, the union rented a billboard in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, right above a Firestone tire shop, and put up a message which read, quote, Bridgestone Firestone, export tires, not jobs. Lawyers for the company pressured the billboard's owner to remove it last weekend. The lawsuit seeks $1 million in punitive damages.
Walmart was defeated in Inglewood, California last month, but won a partial victory in the Windy City this week. The Chicago City Council voted 32-15 on Wednesday to approve a 150,000-square-foot Walmart in a poor neighborhood, but voted down a zoning change to put a Walmart in a middle-class suburb. Now, Detroit and New York City are the only large metropolitan areas left without Walmart stores.
Pilots and air traffic controllers in Israel have threatened to stop all air traffic to and from the country unless the government cracks down on pirate radio stations. The pirates are increasingly causing interference to aviation frequencies, but so far the government's let them off easy because they're nearly unified in their support of the ruling coalition's hardline stance against Palestinians. However, both the Israel Air Traffic Controllers Union and Pilots Union say the threat to public safety from interference is more important than political support.
16,000 Colombian banana workers went on strike Thursday due to a failure to reach an agreement with management on wages. The banana workers' union, Sintenagro, believe they have the ability to completely halt exports from the world's third largest banana-producing country. Workers want a 9% wage increase, but management is refusing to give them more than 6%. Chiquita, one of the corporations facing a work stoppage, is under investigation by the U.S. government after voluntarily admitting its Colombian subsidiary was paying protection money to paramilitary groups deemed terrorist organizations by the U.S. government.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. American workers were better off 30 years ago than they are now. This according to the University of Michigan's National Poverty Center, which took U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics figures from 1973 and 2003 and adjusted them for inflation. In real dollars, private sector non-management workers made about $6,000 less last year than they made 30 years ago. Since 1973 and the inflation seen in that decade, wages have been eroding in real terms ever since.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, it sure stirred up the chat room, my remarks about Ralph Nader. Is he a liar, or is he merely misinformed? People say, well, you know, he's just pointing out the corruption of the American political system. I don't disagree with that. You know, I think the Democratic Leadership Council is an extremely toxic and dangerous thing within the Democratic Party. I think corporate money in the Republican and Democratic parties is terrible. I mean, I'll give you a long list of problems with the American political process. I believe that we need to have publicly paid for elections. We need to have caps on what can be spent. We need to require as a part of getting a radio television station license or a license to use public rights of way to string cable lines or public airwaves to hang satellites in. We have to require people to air political debate as they do in most democracies. But that's not what Ralph Nader is saying. I mean, you know, yes, of course he's saying those things, but that's not the take-home message that I got from the piece that I heard on Vermont Public Radio yesterday. And that I've heard him say over and over and over again on television and on radio. What he keeps saying is, why can't I have a third party? What, don't you want democracy? It's not fair. Third parties are good things. Third parties help democracies. Third parties increase democracy. If the idea of democracy, or if an idea, of course it's a complex concept, but if an idea of democracy is that the majority, that the will of the majority of the people within the constraints of, you know, constitutional limits, protecting the minority rights of minorities, I mean, we've got all these caveats, but if the core idea of democracy is that the will of the majority of the people is what gets done, then third parties in our constitutional system are anti-democratic. Yes, it is a flaw in our system. But it is not a flaw that Ralph Nader is pointing out. Instead, he's pretending it doesn't exist and whining about conspiracies. Now, yes, there are some conspiracies out there. The Republicans and Democrats don't want him in the debates. They don't want him raising issues. You know, blah-de-blah-de-blah, blah, 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 and I think he should be. I would love to hear his voice more because he reflects my points of view. But, Ralph, let's tell the truth about how democracy works in the United States. Other nations have confronted this. When we first started out, the world's first, arguably, democracy, some folks would say New Zealand preceded us. But in any case, here we are, essentially the first world, you know, we started it out and we came up with this idea of winner-take-all elections. Whoever gets the most votes. And you end up with one person. So if you've got, you know, a congressional district, whoever gets the most votes in that congressional district becomes the congressman or congresswoman from that district. What about all those other people? What if there's five candidates running and the person who gets the most votes only gets 21% of the votes? What if four of the other candidates represent an opposite viewpoint and they together got 75% of the vote? So the majority of the people, although they were dumb enough to split their vote among four different people, the majority of the people want, you know, every house in the community to be painted purple, but the guy who's in favor of painting every house in the community orange wins because he got 1 point more than it. It's not democratic. It's a problem with our system. And there are solutions to this problem. And other nations have faced this. Australia faced it, for example. They had imitated our system very closely. And about 15 years ago, they put into place something very similar to instant runoff voting. I forget immediately what they call it now. But basically, you get to pick your first, second, third, fourth choice for a particular
race. And what it does is it allows multiple people to run in multiple in a race. And, you know, so in the last election, for example, I could have voted for Ralph Nader as my first choice, and Al Gore is my second choice. And if Ralph Nader didn't achieve a plurality of votes, then my second choice would become my vote. And if we simply had that system, instant runoff voting in the United States, you would have a far more democratic system. You know, why isn't Ralph Nader out pushing for that? Well, yes, I realize the Green Party is aggressively, and over 250 communities in the United States now have instituted instant runoff voting. San Francisco is probably the largest. And it works. It works really well. It's a great grassroots movement, and I want to see more of it. Because the only other way to solve the problem of our rather primitive democracy, see, it was in 1861 that John Stuart Mill, the guy who wrote On Liberty, it's a brilliant book, by the way, it was in 1861 that John Stuart Mill came up with the idea of proportional representation, where he said, hey, you hold an election, you got five people running, and you have five seats. In other words, you don't break things out into districts. So say, for example, if a state, I mean, here in Vermont, it's a bad example because we're so small, we only have one congressman. But say New York State has got, I don't know how many they've got. Let's say they've got 12 congressmen from New York. I frankly don't know. But let's just, you know, imagine that it's 12. So instead of each congressional district having a winner-take-all, first-past-the-post vote, what you do is you have the entire state vote. And the people who, the 12 people who get the most votes become the representatives in Congress. And that way, you may have two Republicans, one Democrat, one Green, one Socialist, one Libertarian. I mean, who knows? That's called proportional representation. It can be done at a local level, and it is in many communities. It can be done at a state level, and to the best of my knowledge, it's not in any states. And it can be done at the federal level. And after 1861, see, in 1861, there were only three or four democracies in the entire world. You know, serious democracies. The world was holding its breath. Well, maybe there was a half a dozen or eight or nine. Many of the countries of Europe, after Napoleon fell and they figured out that the French Revolution wasn't such a terrible thing. I mean, it was a terrible thing, but, you know, democracy was possible after a despot. That most of the mature democracies of the world now have proportional representation. And that's why they can have a third party and a fourth party and a fifth party. And they have these coalition governments. And the coalitions get together and they elect the prime minister rather than the people directly. And it's a more democratic system. Yeah, that's true. Why isn't Ralph Nader complaining about that? Because to complain about that, he would have to tell the truth about the fact that his participation in the presidential election of 2000 and in the presidential election of 2004 is actually making the process less democratic because it is more likely to thwart the will of the majority of the people. And if that's one of your definitions of democracy, and it sure is for me, then his behavior is anti-democratic. End of rant. Yeah, I've said this before, but then where I started with this was Public Citizen, one of the great organizations, one of the legacies that Ralph Nader has left us that will survive him, has just issued a report about tort reform. There is this tort reform is a fancy way of saying that this administration and their buddies in big business. And we're talking some serious buddies and some serious big business. We're talking about the 100 largest corporations in America giving $49 million directly to political action committees, not to mention the hard money that we don't know about, you know, because it goes through individuals. 82% of that money going to Republicans. 29 corporations and business groups lobbying aggressively with 475 lobbyists on the Hill pushing this one issue. What is it? Tort reform. In fact, they are saying Bill Frist, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, the guy whose family made a fortune buying up nonprofit hospitals, turning them for profit, squeezing blood out of their patients, turning Bill Frist into a multimillionaire, now the head of the Senate, this weasel. Bill Frist
is trying to delay congressional action on a defense appropriation bill which would provide support to our troops so that Congress can first consider class action reform, the ability of people to sue big corporations. Can you believe this? It's called the Class Action Fairness Act. I swear, in order to be a Republican, you have to read George Orwell and consider it nonfiction and hold it up as an ideal. They are so good at newspeak. The Class Action Fairness Act. Public Citizen found that whereas 11 of the 17 state cases were certified, only 9 of 26 federal cases were certified. In other words, the bottom line is they want to say that if you want to have a class action lawsuit in a state court, you can't do it. You've got to put it in a federal court. And the federal courts are always going to be more amenable to the corporations and the corporate interests because they don't have to answer to the local people. State courts, in many cases, are elected, and even where they're appointed by people who are elected. The federal bench is if you get on the federal bench, it's a lifetime appointment. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, you want to take me on about Nader?
Yeah, going back a few minutes ago. Well, not take you on, actually support you in that. But I would like to talk about the voting going back even further than the real elections. The primaries are a real problem.
Yeah.
1976, in the Democrats, there was Frank Church, Jerry Brown, Mo Udall, and Jimmy Carter running. Mm-hmm. If you had looked at the group altogether, you would see the group of Brown, Udall, and Church. Many people like me would have voted for any one of them over Carter.
Right, because they were the more liberal of the bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they had run individually against Carter, they would have stomped on him.
Right.
But the vote got divided up.
That's right. We need instant runoff voting for primaries as well.
And
right.
Actually, I believe we need voting where we can vote out for each candidate and rate them. Say, I prefer this one, this is my second place choice, and so forth.
Well, that's instant runoff voting. That's what I'm talking about.
But instant runoff, you don't get to vote for every single candidate, do you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, or at least the way they do it in Australia, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to, if you got five candidates, you got to make five choices.
Yeah, and exactly. We need to be able to vote for every single candidate, because we do in our own minds anyway. We do in everyday life in our normal business. When we have committee meetings in companies, we say, well, I prefer this, but I'll settle for that.
Yeah, I agree. And this would transform American politics. And, you want to get corporate money out of politics. It's going to take the will of the people to do it. How is the will of the people going to be expressed? We've got to take back control of our political processes. And this is where I am so excited and enthusiastic about what the Green Party is doing by getting instant runoff voting into local communities and running local candidates. God bless them. I'm 100% there with them. I fully support them. However, when they participate in state races or in federal races where they are able to swing the race to the Republicans, in these times when the Republican Party has come to represent literally fascism in America, admittedly the Democrats aren't that much better, but at least they're a little better. And
I'm working in the Democratic Party right now, and
yeah.
All we have to do is look back at 1972 here in Colorado. Where the Democrats suddenly elected Tim Worth, Pat Schroeder, and Gary Hart, I believe, all at the same time. It was just a sudden takeover.
Yeah.
And right now, we have a progressive candidate here for Senate in Colorado who's just doing amazingly well. He's just stomping on the competition. And he's really waking people up. The crowds just react to him so beautifully.
That's wonderful.
And he's working within the party.
Yeah, and that's what we need to do. I mean, if we're going to get instant runoff voting in the United States, the Greens are working on it very, very effectively at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a pretty good job. But I think that really even those of us who consider ourselves Greens or progressives, or even people who are members of the Green Party, or here in Vermont it's called the Progressive Party, should also do as you have done, Jeff, and join or infiltrate the Democratic Party. And bring about these changes. We've done it before. I mean, this is how we got the direct election of the Senate in 1917. It's how women got the vote in 1920. It's how the Civil Rights Act got passed. People got active in the political process through the two political parties because, unfortunately, that's the system we have.
Yeah, and changes are happening. Kucinich, by the way, got 30% of the delegates from Colorado now.
That's great.
He just got 50%. We get more effect.
He just got 50% I think it was Alaska. He got 50% of the vote. I mean, it's wonderful. I'm so pleased to see this guy out there still campaigning
And he's not trashing Kerry. I mean, he comes right out and he says, you know, John Kerry's going to be our nominee, and I fully support him. And here's what I think about the issues. Vote for me. And so within the Democratic Party, there will be people who think like me showing up at the conference, at the convention, you know, helping write the plank, helping the platform, the planks in the platform, and helping bring about change in the Democratic Party. That's how to do it. It's what you're doing. It's what Dennis Kucinich is doing. It's working within the two-party system in order to transform it so that eventually we can reach the point. And maybe we can do it fairly quickly if enough people, you know, listen to programs like this and get it. Now, what amazes me, frankly, as an aside here, Jeff, is I don't think the majority of liberal talk show hosts understand this, which scares the bejesus out of me. You know?
Yeah, as well as the thing is that when it's all treated as entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than really as a thing of education. We need to educate, not persuade. We don't need to make people angry. And that's the neat thing about Mike Miles and Dennis Kucinich. If you were to watch after each of these people speak compared to the Kerry people and, in our case here in Colorado, Salazar, you know, when the regular mainstream Democrats speak, the crowd, you know, claps and so forth. But after Kucinich and after Miles,
they go nuts.
People are on their feet. And, I mean, the response per person is just dramatically greater. These people are appealing to the heart and head.
There you go. And that's what we need. We need more and more of that, and we're going to bring it about by involving ourselves. And frankly, you know, I said, you know, I don't think most liberal talk show hosts understand this. I don't, you know, certainly most conservatives don't. And I think the conservatives should be worried about this too. You know, this is something that is American. It's not just political. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Europe is banking on market forces to help cut greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
Next year, the European Union will launch the Greenhouse Gas Emission Trading Scheme. It will allow companies across Europe to buy and sell emissions allowances to meet overall reduction goals. Michael Marvin likes that approach. Marvin is president of the Business Council for Sustainable Energy, an industry group based in Washington, D.C. He says trading air pollution permits originated in the United States under the Clean Air Act as a way to cut sulfur dioxide, or SO2. Marvin says other countries have used that model to curb carbon dioxide emissions.
We're seeing progress on emissions trading. The progress, frankly, has been more rapid internationally than it has been domestically. As a result of the success of the Clean Air Act amendments and the SO2 trading program, we're seeing countries all around the world begin to adopt these trading programs, primarily in the form of CO2 trading.
Congress narrowly rejected a carbon emissions trading scheme in the McCain-Lieberman Climate Stewardship Bill last October, but Marvin says the market-based approach is gaining support.
The idea that we can monetize the environmental activities of companies who go out and proactively work to reduce their impact on the environment, that holds a certain amount of comfort and sway for policymakers. It simply says, look, here is the benchmark. If you are able to overachieve and overreduce, you will receive some financial benefits from that.
Congress might reconsider the McCain-Lieberman bill later this year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
No, it's actually Big Brother. Yeah, Big Brother is watching. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman back with you. Wrapping up another 3 hours of truth and common sense in broadcasting. What a refreshing idea, huh? The Mooney-owned Washington Times, not one of my favorite sources, but every now and then, they report something that actually has a fact in it. The official Washington instrument, PR device, of Moonies and Mooney employees like Tony Blankley, Reverend Moon, who has declared himself the fulfillment of Jesus Christ's work on earth and said that America is the great Satan. The Washington Times reports that numerous federal government agencies are collecting and sifting through massive amounts of personal information. Now, I'll bet you thought that, remember the total information awareness when John Poindexter, the felon, former felon, I think is the proper term, from the Iran-Contra scandal, as it were, when John Poindexter had come up with his total information awareness, and basically they shut it down. The Pentagon, officially. So what has happened now, according to a survey by the General Accounting Office, again, the GAO, I mean, this is just, you know, an agency of Congress, look into what's going on. Probably some congressperson requested this. The GAO interviewed 128 federal agencies. And, I mean, I don't know how many there are, but there can't be that many more than that. 128 federal agencies. And they found that as of this moment, 52 of them are already using data mining operations. That is where they're compiling your personal information, credit card reports, credit card purchases, other financial reports, other financial data, all this stuff. 199 data mining programs altogether.
the 131 already operational. Amazing, huh? It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Adam Cohen for answering our telephones and engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for selecting our music. To Shelby for streaming us on RadioPower.org. Thanks to our sponsors for making the program possible. Ben and White Rose Society.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
And thanks to you. See you tomorrow.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Ball said after reading.